So it's a big week in Bloomington. We have the opening of the new transit center and dispatch operation. It's the grand opening of a large project earlier today. It was over budget and delayed a little bit, but is it worth the wait?
Well, it is, and I'll tell you why. And really, it's not Bloomington Transit's fault at all that it's late. In part, it's weather, there were delays in construction. But the real reason it is late is because a decision was made to turn it into what was proposed to be a one-story building, just the transit center. And in part because we require private developers to build up to have two or three stories downtown. And here was a government building that was going to be just one story. So that some equity issues, and we decided that a perfect fit for the upstairs was to open our dispatch center. The dispatch center in our old Bloomington Police Department, which used to be the old City Hall, has been there for decades and is really not ideal conditions for the importance of the job that those people do. So when I first was elected, I went in and toured it and talked to them and actually said, we're going to, at some point, get you a new dispatch center. It took a decade. It's a very expensive proposition, and we wanted to get it right, but that's what caused the real delay for transit. But I think it will be an iconic building. That dispatch center will be there for decades to come under much more ideal circumstances. And you know, this is metamorphosis week in Bloomington. This is when we go from a population of 50,000 people to 80,000 people, and it's all the more reason that transit is so important. And the real success of that actually goes back a few years before this, and that is Bloomington Transit has outgrown its current facility at 4th and Washington. And they were looking at a new headquarters and were looking out of downtown in the periphery of the community because land is so much cheaper. So it's much like what the library has done, choosing to stay downtown. Transit has decided to stay down, just like our post office. I mean, these are all things that we've really worked hard at making sure that we keep these iconic institutions downtown and make sure people think of downtown as the a transit hub and know that you don't have to rely on an automobile to access your downtown.
And you can tell there's a lot of thought and money put into the quality of the construction. Bigger price tag, but again, it's showing other developers downtown what I guess Bloomington expects in terms of building.
That's the idea, and durability is important to us too. And there's that, you know, there's that temptation in government, especially here we are in budget week, and knowing how hard it is to make ends meet, that you want to try to do things at the lowest possible cost. And obviously, when you can responsibly do so, you should. On the other hand, when I look at the old dispatch center, you see how it very quickly aged and became, you know, very hard servicing of the equipment and the furniture in the place. And I know it doesn't seem like something that should be important for maybe taxpayers to think about the furniture quality, but these are dispatchers who work entire shifts in one place, and you really do want them as attuned to what they're doing as possible, with as little distractions as possible. So it really is worth the investment, both in terms of the quality of the job they'll be able to do, but also the longevity of the facility.
I took a tour yesterday, and I will say that it is impressive when you walk through it. Does that also say something in terms of what public transportation means to the city of Bloomington?
Well, I hope it does. Again, it's the kind of thing that you look at our existing facility, and it's not really set up to be customer friendly. I mean, the outside is where people spend most of their time. This, we hope, will become an inviting building, and you know, we're going to see that the transit numbers, as you probably know, have continued to go up every year. We're setting records every successive year, and with our population growth, with the growth of the IU campus, with more and more students living in downtown, more housing of all sorts being built downtown, I think we're going to see increased ridership. So it is important for that to be iconic. This isn't something that's an afterthought. This is something that we want to be a destination attraction, make it inviting, and that all people will know that they, if they want to, and we hope that they do, we can rely on transit.
So speaking of budgets, it is budget time. The City Council in full force, as well as yourself, putting together the budget for 2015. Yeah. How is Bloomington adjusting to the ebb and flow of how the state is affecting revenue and, of course, the expenditures?
Yeah, what we're finding is that we have built-in costs now, and I'd say the last 3 to 4 years in particular, that our budgets have not changed much, that there's so little wiggle room because primarily, our budget is 80-85% personnel costs. So that's a built-in expense. You're not, all of our other categories are supplies, services, capital. It's extremely difficult to be able to do much new. You either, if you're going to do something new, that means you've got to retire some other project, some other service in order to afford it. And that's meant that with the that slim margin between our actual cost year to year that are built in and new revenues that come in, you know, we're not able to do much more than maintenance budgets. And that's a frustration for our department heads. It's a frustration for citizens on boards and commissions, taxpayers in general, who they want service. They want projects done. They want investment in the community. So, you know, that's we're not in the same position that other communities are in the sense that they're having to lay people off and cut back significantly. But you know, that gap between our ability to provide new service and afford it and the revenues coming in continues to narrow. So in the 90s, early 2000s, this city had a property tax cap that went up to about 5%. You could have new revenue. You didn't have to ask for the maximum, but you had that flexibility. We don't have that flexibility anymore. We're now well below 3%. In fact, our county option income tax, the COIT rate, we're only assuming a 1.25% increase. It produces very little new revenue, and so that limits what you're able to do.
You mentioned about some projects. Will residents notice anything different next year in terms of projects that perhaps have been cut, or the other direction, things that will be added that are new?
I think that what you see are aging capital, you know, and of course some of it is weather related, and this the best example is, I know it's the middle of August and we're looking at 90 degree weather, but you know, we're still coping with the impact of last winter. It's a long winter, more snows than in the city's recorded history, and that has taken a toll on the street. So to be able to maintain the streets, you know, that's where you start to see it's taking sometimes longer to get to potholes, in part because there are so many more of them, and we don't increase staffing based on the number of potholes or paving projects that we have to do. We base it on what is affordable and makes for a sustainable budget. So I think it's wear and tear. It's also wear and tear on, for instance, parks properties. You know, if you're a tennis player, you're going to notice this. If you're sometimes the golf course will have issues that it takes time to address. So it's not some big service that disappears. It's quality of product that's out there. And in part, that is really infrastructure related. So we're really trying to, and last year we sought and received a $1 million appropriation for parks capital. We're doing the same. You know, people will start to notice old police cars being phased out, new ones in, new fire equipment. So a new transit center, new dispatch center. So it's really trying to prioritize your needs at the same time maintaining what you've got.
So I see where the city hired a financial planner to get through this.
Yeah.
And now, just today, I see a press release regarding a new city controller,
right,
which, for those who don't know, the controller oversees the financial
office
of the city.
Essentially the chief fiscal officer of the city, yes, chief financial officer, CFO of the city.
So how will those two merge or help each other?
Well, the timing of it really dictates that the Crowe Horwath is our consultant, that they'll continue to finalize this budget because of the deadlines that are necessary. The budget must be adopted under state law by October, but more importantly, there are advertising deadlines that must be met, and those are mid-September. So our new controller is Jeff Underwood, and he will begin on September 2nd, and it's completely unrealistic and unfair to expect him to get out in front of this budget, but it does allow for a transition time. From Crowe Horwath will be able to talk about what went into the structuring of this budget so that he can get in front of it he'll be in charge of implementation of this budget as opposed to the preparation of the budget. He's certainly got the experience, and this is a former city controller.
We have some viewer questions that I wanted to pass along. Michael sent in this message on email. The Bloomington Food Policy Council has worked since 2011 on getting the City Council to consider passing a food charter that would express support for food security. Do you have any advice on how the Food Policy Council should advance?
Sure. I've talked, Jackie Bauer is our city's sustainability coordinator, and she's real familiar with this. And we communicated recently, actually it's probably more than a month ago, that I'm fully supportive of it. And really now it's just a matter of getting on the City Council calendar and moving forward with it. I mean, it really is that basic at this point. The The group has done an amazing research. This, I think they started a year or 18 months ago on this project, have done a tremendous amount of research. It's informed me, I mean, it's made me look at other, there are other cities in the country that have already done this. And so I think we're ready to go. It's really a matter of getting on the city council agenda and moving forward.
Joseph sent a message on email, given the recent events in Ferguson, Missouri this past week. Can you tell us about the changes to the BPD and IUPD in the past decade in terms of the kind of equipment that the forces acquired and assuring that they have what they need?
Sure. I'm sorry, they have what they need, meaning?
In terms of any new equipment, at what cost, training.
Yeah, I can't speak to IUPD at all. I can only in the sense of positives. I mean, they have just been unbelievable partners in this community, and it's been phenomenal. I really want to praise IUPD. When it comes to BPD and equipment, you know, that's something just as we have with the fire department, we invest pretty heavily. And, you know, there are a lot of jobs in city government that are dangerous jobs. Police, fire, we all think of. There are also all the road crews, people, sanitation crews. I mean, there are a lot of equipment, a lot of traffic, a lot of things happening that can go wrong. And so safety is, you know, is incredibly important. And you think of the job that police do, it's, you know, just look at the daily police reports and the kind of challenges that they face. So in terms of equipment, you know, we've really tried to ask, I ask frontline officers and firefighters pretty frequently, how are we doing on equipment? And you know, we're pretty much a modernized force in both fire and police. But the other thing that was important to us is training. You know, I think you look at Ferguson, there's a myriad of issues in terms of their response, in terms of the underlying issues, which of course is not limited to Ferguson, it's nationwide. But when it comes to their response, their police response, one of the concerns that I've had is the kind of equipment that they have, some of that surplus material that came from the federal government. It's not just the equipment itself, it's whether or not people are trained to use it. And that's true even of things, you know, we're talking about military equipment, obviously is something that can be controversial, but you think about just their day-to-day sidearms that police have, a baton. Now, no one would really object to an officer having a baton, but the real concern to me and to everyone ought to be, are they trained properly in the escalation of force, that you don't just start with this giant show of force. You try to work verbally, you try to work passively, and you escalate up. So we're one of the few communities in the state that has a joint training facility. You know, we have our own police fire training facility out on South Walnut that we built, you know, during my administration, and that's something that not only are they, the individual force is trained incredibly well, they train together. We're one of the rare instances where you have a city with fire and police training together. I think it's engendered a new respect between them. There's still a competitive, I think a healthy competitiveness between the unions that represent those first line responders. But, you know, I think we're in a pretty good position when it comes to the training. And I can't speak to IUPD in terms of equipment, but I know that they also have incredible training. And you know, we seek to recruit from IUPD as we're doing hiring because of the quality of their officers.
You answered a few of his questions. One, though, maybe you can elaborate a bit more on is assuring us that BPD does not engage in profiling of any kind. Is that part of the training?
Oh, absolutely. It's part of police training, but yes, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot of specialized training that people probably don't realize police go through and BPD goes through. That's one. The other is crisis intervention. You know, that you come across mental illness and trying to make that distinction between, is this alcohol related? Is this mental illness related? Is this someone who's truly resisting arrest, or is this someone who is suffering some sort of medical condition, mental condition? And those are specialized training things that our officers go through. I imagine that's true in other places as well, but I know it's true for us.
And I would assume you would say the same about officers being justified in using deadly force against a citizen, that I'm sure that's all part of,
you know,
the training.
I think that's probably of all the disturbing parts, and I certainly don't mean to try to minimize the fact someone lost their life, but of all the disturbing parts of the coverage of Ferguson, it's that I fear that it's setting this belief in some people's mind that this is the way all police forces would respond, you know, that automatically going to flashbangs and tear gas and military style vehicles rolling in. You know, you look at our officers, even when it comes to protests against the police, our police get out in front of a demonstration that might be occurring to protect the very protesters who are protesting them. I mean, that they are so incredibly well trained when it comes to that. I forget what it was, but it's like a continuum of force that, you know, you really try to start with just your presence, the officer's presence, hoping that that has an influence. Next is verbal. You move up the chain and ultimately to deadly force. But that's an extreme rarity in this community. So, you know, they're trained at that, and I hope that people in Bloomington know that the last thing police want to have to do is ever use force. I mean, they do not relish the opportunity. And I think when you look at that show of force that's being used in the Ferguson example, you know, in my mind, I'm not there, but in my mind, it started at a very high level and now are having difficulty ratcheting back.
One more follow-up question on this topic. Public safety concerns also came more recently on the Beeline Trail. You also had a new initiative about a year ago for a crime reduction plan,
right.
And it's been, you know, 7 or 8 months since then. Can you update us on that plan?
And there were two plans, and they're both working extremely well. One is the crime reduction plan, and it's allowed us to deploy officers in a much more strategic way based on basically the computerization of crime reports that come in, crime incidents that come in. And then the other part was a downtown outreach. And what we've seen is a decrease in the number of arrests that have to be made for public intoxication, for disruptive behavior in downtown. And that's because we have outreach officers who are out there talking to people and not, again, it's a continuum of force and using their discretion and working with social service agencies directly. You know, I would really encourage anyone interested in this to just talk to the social service providers who serve people in the downtown area. They all are speaking extremely highly. In fact, what we're seeing now is in some instances where there's been someone, whether it's a mental issue or alcohol, drug-related issue, that we have people requesting specific officers because they now feel a trust that they didn't have when it was sort of an anonymous police force to them. Now they are relating to the very people who are out there talking to them. So, you know, it's a different approach. It's working very well, and we're going to continue to try to improve it, but so far, you know, so good.
Chad sent this message on email, having relocated to Bloomington in 2013. It's been exciting to see all the new development going up throughout the city, especially downtown. Do you see this growth trend continuing, and do you envision any construction with taller buildings than what we're seeing?
It's a fascinating question to me because what I hear are people on both ends of that spectrum, eye of the beholder. You know, newer people to the community in particular, people who had lived here, went to school here and come back and visit, they tend to look at this growth and think this is phenomenal. This is a city where things are happening, investment is occurring, opportunities are available. Those of us who have lived here for a long time sometimes fear, are we losing the Bloomington we've come to know? And I try to remind people to be at least somewhat philosophical about that, because the Bloomington we came to know and love, you know, was the very same thing that the people from the 50s and 60s looked at when it was happening and thought, I don't like this. And then you go back even before that. I mean, if you go back every generation, people were very upset. If you look in the old archives of newspapers, people were upset about Kirkwood being developed as commercial space instead of residential space. So, you know, it's every generation looks back and feels like we're losing what we had, but that current generation looks at this and loves it and wants to know where is it headed. The Chad and, you know, his generation will, if he's here in 20, 30 years, will not be happy about the changes. He'll be upset about losing what it is some of us are upset about having right now. It's just an interesting continuum. So the answer to his question, though, specifically about what will happen, yes, it's going to continue to grow. It's going to get taller. And again, it's another generational thing. In the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of pressure on policymakers to stop sprawl. You couldn't look at any election at the city or county level without hearing the word sprawl. And the idea was we need to focus development in the downtown area. People shouldn't have to rely on an automobile. We ought to have a walkable community. We shouldn't be taking up every square foot of green space. We should be building up, not out. We're doing that now. And of course, now people are beginning to feel like the pendulum's swinging back too far the other way. And we're seeing all these student apartment complexes and taller buildings. So we're going to be trying to achieve balance by trying to encourage other type of housing, demographic balance, not just student housing in downtown. But yes, in the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to see a very tall building on Kirkwood that may well be another hotel. All those OMB-owned properties are going to be developed as apartment complexes, a hotel perhaps, a bank headquarters. They are going to be, there will be more buildings, taller buildings. It is a growing city.
He was also wondering, with the next stretch of I-69 coming 2015, 2016, are companies already starting to contact Bloomington for relocating here?
I've not heard that, and in talking to the Chamber of BEDC, they've not heard that specifically to I-69. I will say that there are some industries already here who are interested in it. You look at our Coca-Cola distribution plant. You know, they're very interested in this and how it's going to change some of their patterns and perhaps allow for additional employment. You know, both with I-69, with growth in the community, I-69 will drive population growth. Population growth drives the physical growth of the community and economic growth in the community. And so it is going to be a different city. When I came to school here, this first week of, it's amazing to me, it was 1978, this week in 1978, and the population of Bloomington was 48,000 people. We're now at about 84,000 people. And that increase of 37,000, 36,000 people, that's more than all but 20 cities and towns in the state of Indiana. I mean, our population has really boomed and will continue to do so. As it does, all this change comes about.
Eric on email wants to know, why will the 17th Street roundabout take so long to complete? Despite the various unique challenges of the intersection, it's such an important road, he feels like it should be a project worth the cost of expediting.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is, it's he uses the right word, it's cost. And it's been modified some because there are so many utilities out there that we've modified the size of it, both to reduce cost, but also to make it practical to not have to move all those utilities. He's right, that's been kind of the Bermuda Triangle of Bloomington for a long time, and it needs to be fixed. But the issues were, where's the money going to come from? And if you take it away from something else, someone else is upset about their project. So it's really about balance. And you know, road projects are planned years in advance when they're announced. People typically hear about them when the construction is about to begin. This is one where people heard about it as the it was being conceived and then planned, and the implementation will come later. So in part, Had we kept on the announcement schedule as we usually have for past road projects, you wouldn't hear about it till we were just about to turn dirt. In this case, people heard about it beforehand, and so it seems like it's taking longer. It's really on no different construction schedule than a lot of other projects.
And this is on Twitter, Bay's Soda Bar, wondering what your concerns for the changes to food trucks and how it could hinder the small business industry.
I don't know which way they mean that. You know, the issue we've had is that you need to be sensitive to the fact that there are businesses, food service businesses in particular, that have overhead and capital that they maintain, rent or taxes they have to pay, and that food service trucks coming in, we need to be careful about how level that playing field is, the equity issue of allowing, for instance, a food truck to park too close to a standing restaurant. The surprise to us was how many have come forward wanting to be licensed. And again, I think it reflects the not only the population increase of the community, but the population increase of downtown. I mean, there are more than 1,500 people living downtown than when I was first elected mayor, primarily students. It's also that generational, it's the demographic change. And the food service trucks that operate, some of them don't open until 9, 10 o'clock at night. It's pretty clear the demographic that they're serving, and that demographic is increasing in numbers. So we're trying to be real sensitive to it, and at every step of the way, we've been in touch with the existing restaurant industry to talk about what works, what doesn't. Some welcome it. Some feel like it's creating foot traffic, getting more people to be interested in downtown, making downtown a 24-hour-a-day activity center. Others look at it and feel like, hey, I don't want that truck, and understandably, I don't want that truck parked in front of my business, so there are some number of feet, I think it's 50 feet from the property line that you have to be away. You also have issues of how long can the trucks be parked out there? Can you just leave it there all day long? You know, there's all these sorts of things. Many, many cities have this. We're not the first city, so you know we'll survive, but you know, we're finding our way for the first time through the number of people coming forward wanting to do this.
Yeah, it's interesting. Very last question, official move-in day on campus today. So new parents, new students, new residents may be moving in.
Yeah.
Any word of caution or wisdom besides watch for the one-way streets to those who may be listening or hearing you for the first time?
Yeah, number one, welcome to Bloomington. If you have half as good as experience as I did as an undergrad, you're in for an incredible treat. And you know, parents do need to know that, and students who now are on their own and making decisions for themselves to know, have fun, you know, absolutely have fun, but be safe is a more important priority. And you're going to have a lot more fun if you are safe. And I know it seems, you know, I hope that doesn't come off as patronizing, but there are some really bad decisions that get made that can ruin your college experience and literally ruin your life. It's an extreme rarity. You know, it's a very, very small number of times that this happens, but you want to really not be that in that small percentage. And then for the other 99% who don't have any problems with safety, you know, again, it's just make the most of Bloomington and really think of Bloomington as home when you're away from home. I can only speak as a person who came down here as an undergrad, assuming he'd be gone in 4 years. Someday he may be mayor.